Alrighty, it is still good morning. So good morning, everyone.
Morning.
Oh, that's a nice. Well, my side said good morning.
Hi, everyone.
My
name's Peter Jackson. Yeah. I work at Xero look after the security stuff there at Xero. And this is my friend, Andy Prow.
Ooh, friend.
I paused. I wasn't sure what to call you.
I must admit, my wife did say they had to give you a big smoochy kiss this morning, but you are well over quota for this trip so far, mate.
Yesterday as well.
So,
too much.
No more smoochy. It's like, you know, anyway, so look, I'm Andy Prow, CEO of Aura Information Security. So we do IT security stuff here in NZ and overseas. Now, look, I'm just going to start off. We've got a great swag pack. So we're going to be asking questions. We have a groovy Surface hat, thanks to the guys down at the front. Groovy t-shirt. We're going to have some speakers.
That's not a giveaway.
I think the coolest thing is this threat modeling book. It is signed.
And there's Bluetooth speakers, which are too heavy to throw, so we have to remember that.
So we just thought we'd start with the best stuff. So we're going to start and end with the best stuff. What we'll also try and do is kick you guys out at about 10 to, just so you can get to the end of the lunch. So
get to the beginning of the lunch.
Oh, yeah. No, beginning of the lunch. Yeah. You know what I mean.
Yeah, we'll try not to run over this time. Cool. Last time we found a convenient way to give away prizes where you didn't have to embarrass yourself, and that was if you tweet with the TENZ hashtag and my name, then we'll pick the ones that amuse us the most or are the least offensive. And sometimes those are mutually exclusive. And then we'll hand out prizes at the end, and we might give away some during as well.
I do particularly like the one at the bottom, though. And actually, the woman standing next to Alan did realise when they came up on screen, and she was like, ah! And had to go and change her password.
Yep. Cool. So today's talk's a bit different than yesterday's talk. So they're not kind of joined together. And the scenario for today's talk is I bought a domain name because I wanted to start a business. And this story has happened before. I think my domain name renewals are in the hundreds of dollars a year, and my businesses are in the zeros a year. But this time that I decided to build a minimum viable product, so just enough to get the business off the ground, because, you know, lean startup and all that hippie stuff. So I've set up this business. It's going to rent out Lego on the internet to adults or children that want to play with it and then return it once they've finished with it.
What do you reckon?
And our job today is to beat up on my business idea, or more specifically, the threat model of my business software.
So I actually think it's quite good. And Kirk is actually quite serious that if this really does pick up, then he's going to leave this whole Xero accounting malarkey behind. Xero future in that, and it is Rent-A-Lego. So we could be here next year with Kirk as CEO of Rent-A-Lego.
It's not called Rent-A-Lego, okay.
Oh, okay. Anyway. Well, I'm sorry, dude.
Anyway, you spoiled the name. The company name is Bricks for Us, I'm the CEO head geek, if you love bricks, you've come to the right place. A lot of customers sitting in the audience today. So it's a pretty simple website. It's basically a file new ASP.NET MVC project using all the default stuff like NT framework and SQL 2012, which was the latest I had on my VM. And I've used all the latest and greatest tables to do layout because the CSS stuff's too hard for me.
But that's okay.
Cool. So I'll give you a little run through the app. So here it is, Visual Studio. You might have seen that before.
Oh, that's beautiful.
Oh, so there we go. It's really well styled, isn't it? What did I do myself? I think I renamed that heading. And I added two more bullet points. So I did quite a lot myself. So what people can do on this website is they can register to become a member. Kirk, and my password is Jackson. No one will ever guess that. And then once they're a member, they can go to the members section and they can see special things like all this Lego that they want. And they can scroll through, and if they see a set that they'd like to put their name down for it to be released to them next, they can click into the Lego set and request it. And then when it comes free, they'll get that Lego set. And there's some other, you know, social kind of hip and cool functionality, like putting reviews in, like the sort of stuff that we write about Lego. And then also you can add files to it. So what have I got? A photo of some Simpsons people. Ooh, and this is a break point. That will be removed at release time. So you can see, you know, like I've added an image and you can click on it and see the image nice and big. And next time I'll run it not in debug mode, see some details that the person's put on the image, et cetera, et cetera. So it's a pretty standard kind of simple ASP.NET website, and you can search. So yeah, you got all the gist of that.
So right? It may be simple, but surely there must be some threats to your business of having this website as your single business. Well, I think there's some big threats to your business just in what it is. But I think there's some other threats technically around why it would also fail, not just because of the idea, but actually because of how it's implemented. How would we go about understanding those threats, Kirk?
How do I turn that stuff off?
Oh, wow. Okay. I hadn't realised we're quite at that point of the
Okay, we're going to leave
okay,
that.
Excellent.
Hopefully it'll go away by the time we get back there.
Okay. Okay. So I think when we look at the biggest threats to Kirk's business...
Yes. Yeah, so basically the process of threat modelling. So this is a really good book, which you could either win or if you're more or less lucky, you can buy it. It's about $65 or something like that.
Actually, you could buy it from us. If we don't give it away, somebody could buy it from us. Does anyone want to buy this book from us?
Yeah, $85.
Your business might work yet.
Yeah. I'm really going to have to try and win you over with this idea. So figure out what you're building and model your system. Find the threats that exist in your model of the system, address them in some way, and then validate that you got it all right in the first place.
Easy.
Pretty standard kind of cycle. And then rinse and repeat. So I wanted to show the new version of the Microsoft Threat Modeling tool. Hands up if you've used the old version of it. Of course, piece of crap, eh? The new version's a bit better. So you don't need to... Oh, still there. Anyone know the shortcut thing to make that go away? I'm just pressing.
Yeah. Alt F4.
Oh, that thing down there.
Yeah, just...
Thanks. Someone just won themselves a prize, Andy.
How big a prize is that? Because you were currently stuck on that one.
They taught me how to close an application, so probably one of the the lamer prizes. No, but that's actually USB 3. Actually, all the prizes are pretty decent, but...
They are. I think that deserves a hat.
In fact,
so who just helped Kirk in his advanced coding skills? There is a hat on your way that must be passed backwards. Wow. That was amazing. Sorry. It was a frisbee disguised as a hat. I couldn't... No, boomerang.
Cool. So the new threat modelling tool has been rebuilt. It doesn't require Visio to be installed anymore. It's free to download and you can install it on as many computers as you want. And they've recreated the drawing surface and they've changed the workflow slightly. So what we'll demo today is kind of one way of modelling your threats in a diagram form. So my system is pretty simple. As you probably guessed, but I'm still going to make lots of money. So I've got a web application sitting in the middle. What do I call my company again?
Bricked.
Bricks. For us website. So we've got our website sitting there. And then we've got a few people using our website, possibly into the multiple digits.
So it'll be two lines. You have two kids. Both users. Are they actually going to pay to use your own site?
So customer browser, yeah, I'm going to charge my kids. They get pocket money, they can pay for it. And so what we're really modeling here is the entities and the data flows. So the customer browser is talking to the website and the website is sending data back. So it's a two-way flow. And just a little hint for using this tool, if you want to do a two-way flow, you click on the first item, click on the second item, then right-click in the middle and choose bi-directional connection.
Well, duh. Of course you do.
Or else you can just draw the two lines separately. That also works. And then it's going to be talking over HTTP. So I'm going to convert those both to HTTP. And that's going to feed slightly into the types of threats that this tool is going to generate as starters. Also, because I have a SQL Server license just sitting around and I have lots of data to store in it, I've got a SQL database, and that likewise has a bidirectional flow between it of data that goes into and out of the database. I'm just going to draw the curve separately. That's not HTTP, or at least not the way I use SQL Server. So I'm just going to pick a random binary protocol across there to talk to the database. And we also have kind of like an idea of a DMZ in our environment that is kind of the boundary between the outside world and our servers. So let's pick a generic trust boundary and draw that around our application. And see, you've kind of got a diagram that you could use when talking to people inside your company. Like, it's not too rubbish a diagram. So we'll call that DMZ. And then the only other thing that's special that you haven't seen yet is there's an administration interface as well. So I'll just add me on my web browser, adminning the system. Two-way again, oops, between that and that. Bet you never thought you'd be sitting here watching someone draw lines on the screen and then being able to connect them.
Connect the dots. So look, so as Kirk built this, where this is particularly useful, as you see as we go through, a lot of the time you do a security test of an application and there's a whole raft of things which may be there, they may be working, they may be broken. But this kind of modeling process is great to try and understand, well, for this app, what are the 20, 30, 100 things I should really be looking at from a security perspective? So instead of, is it vulnerable to the OWASP top 10? Yeah, I guess so. That doesn't mean there's 10 security issues you have to worry about. There's actually about, you know, a wee tad more.
Hey, that was really good. I got to tidy out my arrows while we were talking. I'm going to do one more thing, which is all these things are called HTTP, which is going to get confusing. So while Andy keeps talking, I'm going to renumber them.
Okay, good. Oh, thank you. So as Kurt goes through, you'll see some of the next reports that come out are some of the bits that we find when customers are most aware of the applications, aware of the changes. So if you suddenly moved this app to somewhere else, if you moved it into the cloud, if you added a new component, if you plugged it into something else, that's where this kind of modeling is actually quite useful. So for the one-off business that Kirk's going to run for about 2.5 weeks until he runs out of money, then probably the amount of time he spends doing this might not be useful. Where this is absolutely vital is as soon as you've got complex systems, multiple boundaries, large enterprise, you then suddenly choose you're going to do some single sign-on somewhere else. That's where moving data across these boundaries is going to be invaluable to you. Is that enough of a...
Yeah, good cool. Good padding.
Thank you.
So once you've drawn this diagram of your system, and it's really an iterative approach, so you're not going to get it right to start with, then you go into this analysis view. And what this does is it follows the stride threat modeling process. We're going to talk about that when we look at some slides in a minute. But it comes up with a bunch of example threats. And these threats relate to different data flows. So let's just pick one random one. It says that the customer browser may be spoofed by an attacker and this may lead to unauthorized access to the Bricks for Us website. So it's kind of in plain English. Consider using a standard authentication mechanism to identify the external identity.
Makes perfect
entity.
Sense.
And so what we can do in here is we can make some notes. We can copy and paste this into our bug tracking system. We can say, you know, issue 123, add forms auth to the site or something like that, and say this is work in progress. It's kind of high priority, but we know we're going to do it anyway. But
just
we'll
basic
leave it on
off
high.
Over HTTP will be fine.
Yeah, cool. And then the last thing you can do, so you work your way through this diagram, documenting basically your responses to these generic threats that come up for different interactions between things. And then you can produce a report at the end. And I'm going to call it tests because I am creative. And it's the kind of like HTML-ish report, shows the diagram overview, and then it shows individual interactions, so the website talking to the SQL server, possible SQL injection, and then it'll be what you guys have considered and how you've mitigated against that risk. Cool. So that's enough demoing that. Back to PowerPoint. So, is that sort of report,
that level of detail, who does detailed threat modeling of their high-value apps? Do we have any takers in the room that is actually going to start is implementing this stuff? Couple. Do you actually find it of value in what you do, or do you just do it as a bit of an exercise because somebody told you to? It's a value? It is a value.
It's not too onerous a process when you do it at a high level, and the idea is just to focus on the data flows across boundaries and not get too hung up on how many servers are inside that DMZ. As long as they're in the same zone, it's kind of a bit irrelevant.
And what we find in the industry of attacking apps and testing apps, it is the ones where you've modeled all the stuff that's going in and out, all of the threats, they are the most robust. They are the ones that have had some thought about the danger of the data coming in and out. So I'm absolutely advocate it.
Cool. So just a little bit of an explanation about how that diagram format works. Look, it's pretty basic. You just have two types of rectangles for external entities and processes under your control. Databases, file systems, LDAP, whatever are data stores. And then you have a flow from one entity to another. And you can draw these trust boundaries around it. So it's a pretty simple diagramming format. It's not quite as hard as UML 2 or whatever the current spec is. And there's an example of a fully fledged threat model. And it's not that much more complicated than the one we just did. Adam, who's the author of that book, there's a couple of his talks online as well, just made the point that the threats cluster around those trust boundaries and the other places around complicated parsing. So I don't find that we tend to do that very much, but I guess if you're Microsoft and you're writing image viewers and stuff like that, you do a lot of complicated parsing. But basically anywhere that the attacker has control of something could be a threat.
So who's heard of the STRIDE mnemonic? STRIDE from threat modeling. So more of those people that have done threat modeling would probably have heard of this more frequently. Spoofing, tampering, repudiation, information disclosure, null of service, and escalation of privilege. So that's what the key threats we are modeling inside threat modeling. So just very quick description on those, right? So the first one, spoofing things. So spoofing things, traditionally, pretending to be something or someone or something that you're not. And this is either you're pretending to be a user that you're not, you're pretending to be a system that you're not. And it's just because the way that you prove who you are is completely flawed. So I am who I am just because I put my name in, just because I put an ID in.
And so the traditional way you do threat modeling is you look at your data flow diagram, and for every element on the diagram, every arrow in every box, you'd say, what if the people it's talking to are not who they say they are? Or what if this box is pretending to be someone else on the diagram? The threat modeling tool, the latest version, takes a slightly different approach, which is a little bit more nuanced, but it does the same thing. So in what places in your system does spoofing affect you?
So tampering, so as the name defines, it is modifying data at rest, data in transit.
Repudiation, or more commonly, non-repudiation?
Of course. So repudiation is claiming that you didn't do something. So therefore, non-repudiation is the fact that you can't claim you didn't do it, to make it more clear.
So non-repudiation is proving that someone did something.
But that is how we refer to it. So non-repudiation is what we talk about in IT security designs, which is absolutely perfect. So exactly. So you can't tell me that you didn't.
Yeah, so logging to a secure location so that you can prove that John was the one that logged in, et cetera. Information disclosure, so that's when someone that's not supposed to get some data gets access to it. So this typically happens when processes or data stores leak information. It also applies to networking, of course. Denial of service, we talked about a fair bit yesterday.
So we did, and I guess what we talked about yesterday was very much the last pipe denial of service. So a lot of the DNS and NTP reflections attack that we see, which is trying to kill and flood networks. But a lot of DOS can just be flooding memory. So last year we demoed XML files of Doom, which massively filled up your memory as soon as you just loaded up an XML file and parsed it. Or in fact, just killing anything, any running process, or just making anything not run or not transport or not talk as you are expecting it to do.
And then the last one is elevation of privilege. So allowing someone to do something they're not authorized to do, letting someone run as admin when they shouldn't, letting code run when it shouldn't. So together, as we said, that makes up Stride. So Stride's not a classification system. It's just a mechanism for analysing threats. And there's some games you can play sitting around in a room with a pack of cards where you just think about these different aspects while you're talking about a particular piece of your puzzle and think, you know, what if information disclosure was to happen? How would that happen to that thing?
And we often use these same ones. So when we're running through threat scenarios with customers, it's always a good, you can take this up to the business level. So we're talking very technical here at the transport boundaries between particular bits of my browser and my database. You can take it up to quite a high level threat modeling that just says for this app, as far as the business is concerned, how much is the business worried about this data getting out? Is it health data? Is it something else? I'm always just chuckling. There's somebody just trying to pair with the wireless here.
You've still got your Bluetooth turned on.
No, I'm just seeing who's pairing to the wireless.
Cool.
There's a bunch of Bluetooth hunting devices, aren't there?
So now we're going to do another demo. Isn't that cute? Such a cute photo. Spoiler alert, they get together at the end of the series. lol, lol, lol. So what was the demo about? Data flow sniffing. So as we go through this threat model, we can drill into different parts of the diagram. So say we're most interested about the cookies that our server issues when someone logs in. They're sent over that HTTP2 link, which is why I numbered that so I could find it again. So we can click on that and see all the different threats that the tool has said. Two different processes of those types are likely to strike. Spoofing of the browser, data flow is potentially interrupted, external entity denies receiving data. I was expecting more. Data flow sniffing. Yeah, so interestingly, it's only marked that as a threat on the incoming direction, not the outgoing one. But really what we wanted to show now is drilling into threats on data as it goes over the wire.
So we're thinking of different ways to do that. So threat modeling, it's a good subject. We want to be making sure that we do it, but it's not like fun. So one of the things we decided to have a bit of fun at the demo. So this is either going to work awesomely or it's going to be quite disastrous. So who here has got a Wi-Fi pineapple toy at home? If not, definitely put it on the Christmas lid. Anyone got young kids? Buy them one of these. They'll love it. Well, you will. So what's a Wi-Fi pineapple? What's a Wi-Fi pineapple?
Well, it's kind of this. It's a little computer. It's not a very particularly powerful computer.
It's kind of in the Raspberry Pi kind of mode.
Yeah,
of devices.
It's not a Raspberry Pi, but similar. It's just running a cut-down version of Linux and has a web interface. And it's really designed for Wi-Fi hacking and penetration testing. So there's two network adapters on it. One is a normal one that's paired to the TechEd network at the moment. So if I was a legitimate user of this, I could use this to jump onto the TechEd network. And the other one has some extra capabilities that some wireless cards don't normally have, which lets us do a few extra things at the same time. So I don't want to jump into too much exactly what's going on here, but this is a log of what it sniffed of the network in the room since about 10.2 when I plugged it in. It must be quite a lot. It's definitely a lot more than in my hotel. Let's see if there's an overview.
If not, we have screenshots. If things die.
And maybe the website's dead. That'd be awkward. Yeah, there it was, just as I refreshed the page.
Perfect timing. So we'll just fill that gap again.
What this is showing here is all the people that have accidentally connected to my Wi-Fi box and are using that to jump onto the TechEd network. I'm guessing that most of you are in the room.
Kelvin, Aaron's iPhone,
Tobias,
iPhone.
I saw Tobias.
Peter's iPhone, Bevan's iPhone.
Cool. The MAC addresses of you. So let's just talk about...
Actually, have we got the one who had that password of 7712?
They've changed it now.
Mind. Course.
Stop rubbing it in. So let's first off talk about tracking. So we wanted to do Wi-Fi because it's a bit more interesting than talking about network cables. And one of the threats, just like poor little R2-D2 in the sand dunes, is being tracked while you roam around. So
there's a few different ways you can be tracked by your mobile device or indeed any device that talks Wi-Fi. One is the MAC address. So that stays the same on your device for its life, and it's globally unique. And you'll see, you saw on that screen how it listed all the MAC addresses of all the people that were using the internet in this room. And so there's been research done, I think it was in the UK, where they put a bunch of sniffers around the city and then were able to track people as they moved through London and draw a map of their activities. And there's also a second way you can track activity, and that's by the Wi-Fi probe requests. So I'll drill into that just a little bit. When you turn on your Wi-Fi and you don't have, when you turn on your phone, unlock it, and you don't have signal, when you don't have an existing Wi-Fi connection, it's going to try and find out which access points it knows about are on and available around it. And the way that it does that is by these probe requests. So there are a specific type of request where the wireless device says, I've talked to Starbucks before. Hey, Starbucks, are you around? Silence. I've talked to Techhead before. Hey, Techhead, are you around? And Techhead replies and says, yes, I'm here. And the phone knows, oh, cool, now I can connect to Techhead. And the interesting thing about this is everyone's phone has a different set of wireless devices that they connect to. So I hardly ever connect to the wireless in Andy's bedroom, but yet he does. And the people that use his office wireless hardly ever do either. And so everyone's kind of got their own unique profile. And there's been other research that's gone into basically, can you build a profile of a device just based on the access points that it requests each time it wakes up?
And by the time it's picked up, maybe it's an airport Wi-Fi, hotel Wi-Fi, maybe you've been traveling, maybe it is the home, family. So indeed, usually that list of, that growing list over over a device's lifetime, and a lot of the devices you can't actually remove easily that list of all the old Wi-Fis you've connected to.
Yeah.
So that's exactly right. That's the kind of the Wi-Fi fingerprint of all the probes it sends out that says, hey, I'm looking for the 400 Wi-Fis that I've joined in my life. Any of them around? So it's...
And the new versions of the operating systems, particularly mobile operating systems, are now doing things like randomizing the MAC address when they send those probes out, just to try and make it a bit harder to track. And they're also changing the way they do the probes. But up until, basically, if your device is 2012 or older, and even some of the newer devices, you're easily trackable using this kind of thing.
And even if they're hidden SSIDs, still goes out in the probe request. So the hidden SSID just means from the AP itself, it doesn't tell everyone that it's listening. But if you've already joined to it, the probe will still be sent out. You'll still try to see, is that hidden SSID up and live?
Cool. So that was kind of like the most basic kind of Wi-Fi threat, is just tracking people that are on in the airwaves. And it's kind of obvious, I guess, when you think about it, that you're transmitting radio so people can listen. The next is snooping. So some Wi-Fi cards have a mode that you can put them in, which is called promiscuous mode. And that means that it can listen into any traffic that's going over Wi-Fi that's not encrypted. And so that means that anything that doesn't have a padlock next to it, so it's not WPA, WPA2, or WEP, that won't really help you that much, anything that doesn't have a padlock is effectively sent over the air unencrypted. And so if you're connecting to Sky City and you're browsing around non-encrypted websites, anyone can just listen in and watch what you're doing. So you shouldn't do that. The next two are really different ways of attacking. Actually, this is the last one. So the snooping one was a passive attack. So you could watch the traffic go by, you could maybe grab some cookies out of that traffic and connect to a website as the person, but you couldn't alter the interaction between them and the access point. But if you wanted to do that, if you wanted to get in the middle of someone's laptop and the access point they're connecting to, then you have to become an access point yourself, try and trick them into connecting to you, and then proxy the traffic on through a real access point or over a wire or something like that.
And it makes it perfect for man-in-the-middling, because you are now routing the traffic through your little device. So it's a perfect in-path to be able to modify the request that actually come through.
So it probably doesn't come as any surprise that we're going to demo setting up fake access points. And in fact, one of the tools we're going to show you
doesn't work as well with newer devices, but there's some work we'll talk about on that. We'll actually automatically set up fake access points. So, Andy, do you want to show your screen while I bring up that?
Hang on a moment, just let me check. Oh, look. I've been browsing for rude pictures. So, if I look at the... but that's okay, because no one knows that I'm going to be browsing for rude pictures, because it's all over a nice secured Wi-Fi. So if I look down this little list of available Wi-Fis, what's kind of crazy, right, is that a number of these Aura ones are available. My downstairs Wi-Fi is available from here. Crikey. The F5 San Jose network's available. Bloody hell. Sky City, Spliff, that's the bedroom network. The Capity Company, the Shanty Cafe. So I think whatever Kirk's done is actually booted my home Wi-Fi, the Wi-Fi on this device, because you can actually see all of these. So as far as my MacBook's concerned, all of these Wi-Fis are up and available for me to access, which is actually cool. So again, I'm just going to... So I'm here plugged into the Seattle HQ. Awesome. That is a great Wi-Fi to be connected to. And again, this is because as soon as I drop down that list, well, my network card pumps out to the little pineapple over there and says, hey, these are all the probes for all the networks that I want to connect to and see if they're live. And it goes, yep, that one is. Yep, so is that one. Ooh, that one's live. So, oh my God. Who has a phone called? Who was that? That's definitely worth the prize. Come and see us at the end.
I hope that wasn't recorded on the video, Andy.
Oh, cram, don't know. Well, it wasn't me. That was absolutely not my device. That was somebody quite nicely filtering it in. So anyway, I'm just going to stay here on Seattle HQ before that one pops up again. Hopefully there's some people in the audience that didn't see that one.
Cool. So that was good. Thank you for talking for a while. I'll flip back to my screen.
I really want to know who that was. I love that.
So I've just copied the log file off that device. It's only a couple of megabytes, and I've got a little script that I'll use to parse it. How many people rock out with the Perl? Tickhead. How many people can't type in front of an audience?
Many. It's a common affliction.
Theater.txt. So we've probably had that running less than half an hour. I'm not sure how long we've talked. And there's been 261 different devices, which is actually a pretty good number for a room of 500 people. And those devices have been probing for 485 different wireless networks. And so I've just put some stats together. So I obviously don't know who you are, but some people have got, 15, 16, 17, 26 Ooh. Networks that they've memorized in their device, that their device is going to try and connect to. And then I've also looked at the number of people trying to connect to different Wi-Fi networks. So let's look for some here. Airport Hotspot, there's a few people on that.
Bacon, Cal, Krusty Pipe.
73,601. I think that's 736.
That's at the end.
That's one at the end.
Yeah.
My script should have put more spacing rather than tabs. But you can kind of see that there's certain networks here that are going to be higher value for me. So where's the Tickhead one?
Spliff. There we go.
There's only one person tried to connect to Tickhead. A lot of people have Vodafone devices at home. So if you've got encrypted networks at home and at work, then that's okay, because when your device tries to connect to my fake one, it's going to notice, hey, that's a different encryption key, my one doesn't work, something's up. But if you've got unencrypted ones like Sky City or Sala VIP, Katarin, I don't know what that is, but if you've got unencrypted networks that you connect to, your phone or your laptop's just going to automatically connect to them. So you need to go into your wireless settings and go in and clear out all those old networks that you don't use anymore. So take out McDonald's Wi-Fi, make sure it's not in there. And that's pretty easy to do if you've got a Mac or on Windows, but it's really hard to do on some phones because you can't forget the network till you're actually on the phone.
So one of the bits that we mentioned yesterday, so for those people who came on to their Advanced Persistent Threatener talk, so we talked about the reconnaissance phase. So one of the things you would do, so if you look down that list, If we did this demo again, then I'm sure a bunch of you would put in some more very rude SSIDs that are going to appear on that little list. But in fact, one thing we hadn't, here's something to try for another day. Let's try and script tag in a SSID and see if we can access the log page.
Ooh. Yeah.
That would be quite cool. So as a bit of a recon, what you'd often do is you'd run tools like this outside of an organization that you're targeting, and then you have a look at all the other home Wi-Fi and unencrypted Wi-Fis, maybe all the execs run Koru Club. So now you actually start to build the picture of who or what Wi-Fis you want to be cloning and what traffic you want to be trying to snoop. What are you doing on my machine?
None of these really seem safe to search for.
Rude pictures of Kirk.
Let's type something that's not.
Wouldn't it be funny if this comes up with a rude picture?
I'm going to get me in trouble.
That would make me laugh.
So what I did just before I switched over was I turned on a packet capture, so it's capturing everything that's going across my device now.
But hang on a minute. I'm connected to the Seattle HQ. So how are you snooping my packets? That doesn't work. What? Yeah, that's cheeky.
Weren't you listening?
I'm still on the Seattle HQ.
It's got a. Okay, so that was only a 77 kilobyte packet capture, so this should be faster than when I was doing it before. So I'll just copy that into Windows because it's easier to analyze it in there. Let's put it in that directory. Hey, drag and drop from one window to another.
Whoa.
Cool.
It works.
Yes. So just open this in Wireshark. So Wireshark's a nice tool for analyzing packets going across a network. So we can look at, can look at all HTTP traffic that was going across our network while I was tracking it. I've captured my admin traffic and not Andy's traffic. But you kind of get the idea. I was listening on the wrong.
Have you sniffed your own password?
Yeah, I was listening on the wrong. On the wrong network card then. But if there's cookies in there, so there's my admin cookie for this pineapple, then if it's going across an HTTP, you can see it on the network, you can capture it. And there's a bunch of other tools that you can use. So one's called SSL strip that sticks basically a proxy in between the victim and the place they're really going to, and takes SSL out of the mix by redirecting them to HTTP for everything instead of HTTPS, and then changing the data on the way through or running other filters.
Perfect. So if you kind of look at the threats that we're kind of playing with here for both for you as individuals, for people in your organization, and the apps that you're running. So really using this technique, you can spoof so that you can pretend to be things in places that you're not allowed to, that you shouldn't be. So you could always, whilst running this, then you can do some funky network stuff. You can also, for people connected through to your Wi-Fi before you pass it on, maybe you do some DNS changes, redirect them to sites that you want them to do, or indeed tamper with the information on the way through. You can extract the data, like the password or the fact that I'm searching for Kirk's rude photos here. Or indeed return back malicious information to me. So if it's HTTP in both directions, then perhaps the response is what I tamper on the way back, so I send back malicious requests or malicious responses.
Cool. So I just wanted to point out that Karma tool that we just demoed doesn't work as well. I think I mentioned that before these days. But there's R&D going into a better way of doing it. And the guys that are doing it for the Pineapple have called it PineAP. And that basically, as well as doing those probe requests, it also uses Wi-Fi beacons as well. What the iPhones and other devices are doing now is they're sending a probe request, getting a response, but they're not trusting the response until they see another packet come across, which is a beacon. And so now these guys are faking the beacons. So it's kind of an arms race, really. And this tool can basically advertise every SSID that you want, and it just rotates between them. But pretty soon someone will think up some way of defending against that as well.
And out of interest, how much did it cost you to completely destroy Wi-Fi security?
Well, all I did was plug it in and type a password.
But
I think it was a couple of hundred bucks. Yeah, maybe 100 US or something. And so it's quite a cheap little computer. So how do we actually mitigate this? So we've got this threat in our threat model that traffic could be looked at over the network, over Wi-Fi or over the cable. We could tell our users not to use unencrypted Wi-Fi. And I try and do that in my company. And They don't really get it. And all the free Wi-Fi that you get around the place, even though you have to log in, it's all unencrypted Wi-Fi, and then you log into some stupid web page. So user education is really hard. What we've really got to do is just encrypt all our traffic. And so I'll show you how easy that is. For the princely sum of $1.99, I bought an SSL certificate at the same time as registering my domain. And all you need to do, I'm teaching how to suck eggs, is configure that, and now your traffic is encrypted, and even if the transport layer is compromised, at least the traffic's encrypted. And we've talked in previous talks about how to make that even more robust. Only $1.99 now for an SSL certificate. You can buy them and throw them away, and they're that cheap. Cool.
So really there is no excuse.
So we've talked about that. The next threat in our threat model that we've discovered
was tampering.
Was tampering. So let's
go
back.
Now, Kirk said some ideas for demonstrating tampering, and I wouldn't let him.
And we should fill this out. Using HTTPS now, mitigated, low threat. And you can actually convert these to HTTPS, and that threat will go away. So we wanted to see tampering threats. So let's go and bring up some of them. And these are the kind of threats that we like to talk about all the time because they're fun to demo. So cross-site scripting, SQL injection, not validating input properly. So let's just pick one of them. So the web server, which is our website, could be subject to a cross-site scripting attack because it does not sanitize untrusted input. That's a fair call. Mm. Do we sanitize untrusted input?
Very unsanitized, I'm sure you are.
Cool. Well, since I wrote it, I'm pretty sure that we don't sanitize all our input. We're actually not too bad in this project because we're using MVC and Razor views. And so cross-site scripting is a little bit harder for an attacker. But...
So should we put that to the test?
Yeah, let's swap places and you can do that while I have a drink.
So having a quick look at the app. So... let me just log in. So was it...
I blew away the database.
My bad. Your bad. So this time I'm going to be Andy, P-A-S-S-W-A-R-D. Oh, I need to register. Groovy. Okay, so we're going to try a bit of cross-site scripting with a twist. Because you've all seen the normal way of doing it, and it's so boring. I'll go to the member section, don't I? Or do I go home? I got it here.
Member section.
That's beautiful. I knew it was in the right place. So what I can do, so maybe I'm going to do a review on, I like the Motocross bike. I think that's awesome. So the first place I would normally try my cross-site scripting, I'd go, I know, I wonder if it's possible to do it here. And I'd go, let me stick in my alert, and I've owned your browser with a little pop-up.
How dumb do you think I am?
Fall for that. Got to try it first. So, hi. So what happens if we just try the normal, good old attack vector? Oh. It beautifully, beautifully stopped me doing it. So that was that's quite elegant, and that's quite attractive.
You're running on localhost, which is why normally there's a 500 error.
And you've released your debug to the the internet. Okay, so forget that. So we're just going to do a normal review. So we're going to do instead. Let's choose a file. So what I'm going to do. So we already uploaded an image.
Yeah, put and, the Simpsons one on. That's cool.
Well, that one there.
Yeah.
Okay, so we look at the functionality of the site, and I'm going to add the review. And I've noticed that when I upload an image, it does something. It also tells me the camera it was taken with, where it was taken. Anyone think of a possible attack vector through this route? And what? Metadata. Ooh, who said that? Ah.
Someone who wants.
Oh, no, give me a real one. No, don't, give me a little one. We'll save those ones.
Oh, sorry. That was my
intent. Okay. Interesting idea. So how about, so what are we going to do? So we're going to write another review. Ooh. And this time, we're going to choose this little funky monkey fella here, because he's kind of cool. So this little funky monkey was actually taken by my daughter when we were in Kenya over Christmas, and he was cute. So if we're going to have a look at this little fella, oh dear. Oh bugger. So our little hairy monkey dude, JPEG file, has actually just accessed our server. Well, browser, sorry. But should we just have a little look-see at what's going on here? So there's our normal Oops. Poof. So I'm sure everyone is, or if everyone's not, familiar with how the script attack works. Let's find some more. In fact, I could just search for XSS. It would have been far quicker, wouldn't it? Why didn't you tell me to do that? Boof. Ah, of course, this little hairy monkey. He was taken with a Canon EOS Script Alert XXS70D. That's not a model of camera you want to go buying, because it breaks browsers. So this is a bit of a bugger. So what do we got? We've got XSS contained in the EXIF tags of images. Oh. So this is actually quite hard to implement. So that little hairy monkey took a lot of time to put together. So let's just have a look at what's going on with that little hairy monkey. So if you have the time and tools to invest, you can actually do some of this stuff yourself. So what you have to do is view the details of the image and type it in. I know, it took a... I guess the expensive part is that you had to get your Windows license. So this is the attack that we've got here. This is XSS embedded in the meta tags of our image. Now,
what are you doing?
I don't know. Microphone? I don't know. One of us is going boom. It's you. So what happens? Okay, so hang on a moment. So presumably, though, this is not a robust attack. So what happens if we actually edit this little dude? So if we just resize him slightly and just make him tiny little monkey. And because we've made him small, let's, if we give him like a little, he needs like a little, and well, there's some eyebrows.
I can't believe everyone's paying to watch this.
Oh, sorry, dude. Sorry. I was getting carried away then. Okay, so, I'm sorry. Yeah, exactly. This is my day job. Gotta love your work. So we are now just actually editing that little image. So what now happens if we upload our modified hairy monkey? Hey, he's cute. Look, he's got... Oh. And if we... Still is attackable. So, of course, the metadata stays. So if your web app is actually uploading images, short of recreating a brand new image, copying across the image, saving it without meta tags, or stripping the tags, in essence, the meta tags are as vulnerable as anything else. And so they could be passed around. You can see the little thumbnails all over the web app. But then you've got an admin page, and the admin page displays the EXIF tags of location, camera model, camera make. That's where the XSS is contained, so you've now owned the admin's browser. So we just like that, because it's a very groovy attack vector, and nothing stopped it on the way through, because nothing was checking EXIF tags of a JPEG for cross-site scripting attacks.
And there was another one. that's mine. I think it was... the other day I read it, where people were putting SQL statements inside the EXIF tags of images, and a SQL injection was happening on the website when it was processing the images. That was kind of cool. Cool. So the mitigation that we have to put there, obviously, is to sanitize our output. And I kind of cheated there, because I used Razor Web Views, and they actually encode output by default. And so I had to turn that off in order to get it.
Yeah, now the truth comes out.
In order to get it to have an issue. So I had to turn on HTML.raw. I had to use HTML.raw to output the camera model. And so that's really a bit of a red flag when you're searching through your code. If you see HTML.raw in your Razor views, you need to look at where that data is coming from and whether it's safe or not. But now that I've changed that, if I Alt-Tab with the right Alt, this page should now be safe to refresh, and it's encoding the output and just displaying it like normal.
And exactly as you say, this is sanitizing the output. The image is there, it is on the server, it will be read, and it's what's coming out to the browser that's actually the attack vector. Cool.
Cool. And then, of course, you could also be required to sanitize the input as well on the way in. So if people are entering search queries, so our site... where is it? Here. You can search for products, because there's going to be so many Lego things. It's going to be awesome. Search for things that have EL on them, like this cool DeLorean. Places where text are entered, that's where you get things like SQL injection happening. So we've done this in the past. We've gone through the mechanics of SQL injection. But it's just another example of... not validating your input properly. And that example also popped up in the threat modeling tool when you looked at the SQL database as some of the threats coming across those connections. But the threat modeling tool doesn't do everything. All it does is really apply a formula across. You have two elements of a certain type and communication of a certain type, then these are the threats you should think about. It's not going to catch everything. So let's put a custom threat into our tool. So it hasn't picked up anything special about the admin user connecting to this website. And there probably is something special that the admin user can do that regular users can't do. So let's add a custom threat to this flow. So we right-click the flow and add the threat. Then we scroll to the bottom and find it. So my threat is going to be something like malicious user finds admin interface. And what category would we put that under? Elevation of privilege?
Bad coding.
And that would be high if it's found, and blah, blah, blah is the description. So now we've recorded that as a threat as soon as we think about it and save it in our threat model. And now we can process it like the rest of our threats and test for it. And so one of the ways you can test for that is you can run a database of common... hey, Firefox, how you doing? Of common web attacks against... of common directory names against a website. And so we happen to have one of those sitting here.
One we prepared earlier.
Burp's going to be a little bit small, so you're going to have to squint. But I'll let Andy do it, because he's the burp man.
So just so all we're going to do here is just demonstrate. So anyone out there, a common user of burp? So what we're going to do, so burp, we just run it as a proxy. What I'm going to do is just the attack here. So for those who haven't used it, runs as a proxy in between. We get to manipulate and play with lots of requests to different websites. So what I'm going to do, I'm going to use an attack here. It's called Sniper. And what I'm going to do is send a whole bunch of requests to this location here. Now, we're going to be quick because we're getting into that run up to lunch. So what I'm going to do, I'm going to grab a file list. My runtime file, if I have a look at it, it basically just contains about 112,000 common directories that exists on websites. So if I run this little baby,
That's a small file as well, and that's freely available. What was that tool called again? Dirbuster. And so what that's doing is just doing lots of different requests to the web server and showing the summary of the responses.
So down here, so it's currently made about 1,700, 1,800 requests to the website. Most of them are returning back in 404s, file not found. But up here at the top, 200s returned from home, product, and review. So as I can see, home, product, and review are valid directories on this website. And so this is where the attack or the threat comes in of, well, what is actually under the review section of my website? Or of Kirk's website? Ah, of course, it's actually the unauthenticated admin portal to edit the reviews and have a look at them. Same as, of course, you would find the unauthenticated admin portal for the product location. So this is where hidden areas of your website don't remain hidden for very long. That's as short and sweet as that demo is.
Cool. And really what we've talked about is a way of processing your threats. So a way of generating them through a tool like Stride or a threat modeling tool, and modeling your system so that you can find those threats systematically. And then you basically go through a cycle of addressing them, checking you have addressed them properly, and then rinse and repeat. Alter your model based on new things you learn, maybe try and increase its scope every few months to take in more and more parts of your system. The recommendation is to try and do it at a sort of a holistic level first and then gradually drill down rather than starting at the bottom and trying to work your way up, because that's harder. Recommended reading, and we've got a tweet stream. Now, I can't bring that up on my screen because of HR issues.
So, but if we do that, there we go. If we do that, then you can now bring it up on your screen just in case the dodgy tweets. So what we've got in the last, in the last 30 seconds, so the prizes, if you haven't seen one of these, it's actually a Microsoft Beatbox speaker. Pretty cool, actually. There were several of them up here. We've snapped a few ourselves. But we still have some to give away. So,
cool. We've gone from Harry Potter Lego to Cider-Man. Next, a little Kirk J. So, Concerned Citizen, you've won a T-shirt.
Cool. Concerns, Come up front, concerned citizen. Awesome, mate. Awesome, cool. Yes, congratulations. Or commiserations.
Someone who's feeling violated and laughing at Hackhead is Jason Huang. You have won.
Oh, that's quite funny. You said violated. So let's. So he gets a speaker. Jason.
Speaker.
Excellent.
Lord Schwing.
Lord Schwing. Well, sorry, he gets a speaker just for being Lord Schwing. Excellent. If you are brave enough to come up here, Lord Schwing, and get your prize, then do so when everyone else has left, because we'll be going, oh, really?
Cool. Dude. Darren Ulster.
Credit.
Got pineappled, and he's won a USB dongle.
Drum roll. Now, so when I said this is a signed copy, it is signed copy. It's not signed by Adam Shostak, who wrote it. It's just signed by Kirk and I. It's from the Threat Supermodels, which is us.
It's kind of more like a deface copy.
Yeah, but it just doesn't. It's branding and marketing. This is what, dude. Seriously, your new company.
Manufacturer's retail price $65 now. Price,
and that goes to. In fact, I think that should go to actually.
No.
Who is going to read and implement and use this? There you go. Right, you know, you win it then. Well, no, otherwise we'd give it to someone that go like, what am I going to do with that? That's stupid. And then they sell it on Trade Me back to you for $85.
So some advice is the first part of the book is really good, so definitely focus your effort on there. And it gets more kind of, you know, esoteric near the end. Cool. So we'll go back to the slides. There's some really cool talks coming up. Chris Jackson's an awesome speaker from the US. He's going to be talking about Emmett, who's also a character in a Lego movie. So Emmett is a thing you can wrap around Internet Explorer and other applications to make them safe in your environment. Alan's talking about how to mitigate against pass the hash, so hopefully you heard a couple of talks about that yesterday. And there's another security talk from Laura on Friday morning as well. And there's links, so we'll put our slides up on hackhead.com. Wanted to pimp the App Defender Day in Wellington on the 10th of December. And feel free to send us emails if you've got questions, or just bug us after this if your questions are more important than your lunch.
Thank you so much. And we're 1 minute early.
Thank you.